This is the No More Wasted Days podcast, and we're your hosts, Sarah Kaufman Bradstreet
and Heather Peachy. Grab your favorite NA drink and listen as we share vulnerable stories so you never feel alone on your alcohol-free journey.
And gain insights from us as we break down our most used tips and strategies that have kept us alcohol-free.
It's time to break free from wasting any more of your days to the drinking, blackout, hangover cycle.
Welcome to another episode of the No More Wasted Days podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sarah.
And I'm Heather.
And today we are joined by an extra special guest. Sarah, I was going to have you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello. Well, thank you so much for having me onto your podcast. So I'm Sarah Rusbach. I am British. I live on the west coast of Australia. So I'm joining you from the future as we are recording this. It's like the evening the day before for you guys. And it's 7 a.m. in the morning for me. So I have just celebrated 5 years of sobriety. So it was my 5-year soberversary this past weekend. And I am a gray area drinking coach. I'm a health and wellness coach and I'm a menopause coach. So I support women in midlife who are dealing with everything that life throws at us at this quite tricky time. And I support women who are in the gray area drinking area, which I'm sure we'll talk about soon. And I support them to get on top of menopause symptoms, to change their relationship with alcohol, and to go on to create more fulfilling, calmer, and more joyful lives, because I find that's what's missing for so many women at this stage and age in their life. And I'm also the author of Beyond Booze. My book came out in February, and it's called Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol Free. It's available all over the US, Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand. And it's really a book that I've written for women, specifically in midlife. And it's not a book about how to get sober. It's a book about how to create a life you love so you don't want or need to drink. So thank you so much for having me here to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for hopping on. So like I told you when I reached out to you, our Daymakers community is actually reading this book. We just started a book club as part of our membership, and everybody picked this one. They were really excited by the title. And I was too, because it's the one thing we talk about all the time. Like, it's not enough to just take away alcohol. You have to then figure out what makes you tick and really find yourself. So I have loved reading it, and I know Heather has. And when I told the Daymakers that we were going to interview you, there were all these cheers on the Zoom. So everybody was pretty excited. So I know they'll be excited to hear this one. To get to know you a little bit more, will you just take us into your personal journey, like a little bit about your drinking story, but more about quitting drinking and transitioning into your alcohol-free lifestyle?
Yeah, so my drinking started at the age of 14, growing up in the north of England, where we would kind of, you know, fill soda stream bottles with whatever we could find in our parents' drinks cabinet and go down the local park and drink these disgusting concoctions of whatever they were, sometimes drink to the point of vomiting, which seemed to be like, that was a badge of honor if you got to that stage. And then you would go home, pass out, and then do it all again the following weekend. And that was very normal where I grew up. It was always for me a question of when, not if, that alcohol would become part of my life, because I'd watched my parents drink alcohol a lot through their social lives. There wasn't problematic drinking, but every social occasion I'd seen my parents have parties, go to parties, have dinner parties, there was always alcohol present. So little Sarah growing up was like, that's what the adults do to have fun when they get older. So that, it's interesting, isn't it, when you reflect back and go, well, how was alcohol role model to me? And sure enough, yeah, my little brain at whatever age it was, you know, really defined that neural pathway of adults need alcohol to have fun. So that fun started for me at 14 or so, I thought. And I drank with gusto. I loved the feeling of getting drunk. For me, I drank to fit in. I had a strong need for connection. I did schools a lot as a kid. And so for me, it was my way of feeling like I had friends, that I was included, that I wasn't the new girl anymore. And this was something that, you know, like when you're drunk and it's like, you're my best friend with someone you've known 5 minutes, right? That to me was music to my ears, because I was the new girl. I wanted to make friends. And that became my way of creating connection all my life, whether that was through university, then I moved to London, I got my first job. And so alcohol was always present, but it was never problematic. It was like if you'd asked someone to describe me back then, they'd have gone, oh, Sarah, she's a big drinker. But that would have been it. No one would have said, oh my God, she's a nightmare. And like I had high tolerance for alcohol. So I held it very well. And I wore that as a badge of honor as well. Like we're talking about London in the late 90s. This was the whole Sex and the City era. This was the girls can match the guys pint for pint down the student union. Girl power, we can get our cosmos and go to rooftop bars and have one night stands. And this is all like female empowerment of this era as we all channeled our inner Samantha and had our role models of those beautiful women. And so again, for me, wasn't problematic, wasn't something that I had any cause for concern, didn't suffer terrible hangovers, could very easily get home at 2 a.m. and be back at my desk at 9 a.m. the next day, do it all again. It's a very high tolerance. For me, it changed when we made the decision to move to Australia, which was in 2010. And by this point, I had my son and then had my daughter very soon after. So they're just 18 months apart. And that really, really rocked all of my foundations in many ways. Like number one, I had a very successful career in London. And all of a sudden, I wasn't working. And I didn't realize, but a lot of my identity had been tied up in the work that I did. And I wasn't getting that sense of achievement, that sense of purpose. That was taken. Plus, I was on the other side of the world with no family and no close friends. And I was with two very young, demanding, like a baby and a toddler, and going to baby rhyme time and baby swimming and pureeing vegetables and cleaning up babies. And in this like continuous monotony and wanting to make friends. And so it was like, well, how do you make friends? And of course, my brain remembered, well, the way you make friends is by getting pissed and getting drunk with people, because that's what worked since I was 14 years old. So I would walk up to these like baby swim groups and I'd be like, hey, anyone want to come out and get drunk this weekend? And these women would sit there like breastfeeding and looking at me like I was absolutely bonkers, because of course they didn't want to go out and get drunk. They had newborn babies. And I took that really personally. And I was like, oh God, there's no one here that wants to be my friend. There's no one here that I'm ever going to meet, get friends with. And so it was a very hard time. I was very homesick. I was very lonely. I was very lost. And I was confused about why I was feeling all those things, because on paper, it looked like I had it all. We'd moved to Australia. We lived by the beach. I didn't have to work. My husband was setting up a business and we'd saved quite a lot of money from the UK. So we weren't in a position where I had to go to work at this point. So on paper, it looked perfect. But in my soul, in my heart, I was homesick. I was lonely. I was sad. And I was struggling. And that was when alcohol became something that I was using to make those feelings go away, because it turns out that alcohol is bloody good at making you not have to feel. And I didn't want to feel. So it just was very slow and very insidious, the build up then of drinking on my own, which I'd never really done before. So it was something that I was doing at home on my own. I would always wait for my husband to come home from work, and then he would take over the kids. And I would go and sit outside in the back garden and I would just like inhale this bottle of wine until I didn't feel. And that became a pattern that continued for quite some time. Now, I had very strict rules. I didn't drink every day. And so therefore I went, oh, well, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have a problem because I don't drink on Mondays and Tuesdays. And slowly but surely, those rules occasionally came to get broken. And as I got into my 40s, alcohol really started to impact me more and more. The hot sweats, the menopause symptoms. Every time I drank, I couldn't sleep. I was waking up at 2-3 in the morning with raging anxiety. And then I went to my GP and I said to her, I'm so anxious. I can't, you know, I've never experienced anxiety before. And at no point did she say to me, oh, how much are you drinking? What's your alcohol consumption like? But very happily gave me a script for an anti-anxiety med, which I decided not to take. And I decided instead to take a break from booze. And I was going to do 21 days because they said it'd take 21 days to change a habit. This was back in 2017. And I ended up doing 100 days. And this was life-changing. And this was not the end of my journey, the start of this sober journey of discovering, oh, this is what it's like to show up every day as someone who has had 8 hours of restorative sleep, who is not crippled with anxiety, whose first thought in the morning is not, oh, well, you're a loser. You said you weren't going to drink last night. And yes, you drank again. And when you actually wake up in the morning and your first thought is, hey, you're going pretty well. That was another night of not drinking. Woohoo. Like that just builds your self-efficacy. It builds your pride and your confidence. So this just continued for 100 days, but I wasn't quite prepared for the reactions that I would get from others. Well, what you're not drinking? Well, when are you drinking again? Oh, well, let's catch up on your drinking again, because I couldn't understand. I was Sarah the party girl, and that was how everyone knew me. And so I went back to drinking, thinking, oh, now I'll moderate. I've taken 100 days off. I clearly don't have a problem, because only like, no one who with a problem from alcohol could take 100 days off. So I'm fine. Now I'll be a normal drinker that just drinks every now and then. And within a couple of weeks, I was back to drinking the same amount as before, because that's how it works. But I never forgot that period of time and how good I felt. And finally, in 2019, after lots of stop starts, which is often the case for most people, I made the decision, everything in my life is better without alcohol, everything. And so I stopped for good. And then I did a lot of work on myself. I went in therapy. I unpacked some stuff from my past. I added in lots of things to make sure that sobriety stuck, so that I still felt I was getting connection, purpose, and that natural dopamine, you know, all of those things. And then in 2020, I retrained to become a health and well-being coach and then a gray area drinking coach. In 2021, I set up my business to support women all over the world to change their relationship with alcohol. And in March 2021, I was interviewed by a very, very popular Australian online magazine. And I shared my story and it went live, and 8,000 women reached out to me within 24 hours.
Wow.
And they said, you've just told my story. And that was when I knew how many women are struggling in this gray area drinking cycle, and that I've had one hell of a job ahead of me to be able to support people. And that was, so I've done lots and lots. I've coached and supported thousands of women now. I do various different coaching programs, but that was where I got to the point of how can I support more women? And that was why I wrote the book, put everything that I know, that I've learned, that I've experienced from my coaching, from my personal journey, from the thousands of women I support, into a book that is easily accessible for all women all over the world.
Yeah, man. When you tell your story, there's so many moments like the making deals. Like I'm like, I won't drink on Monday and Tuesday. All those. And when I was reading them too, it was the same. And then the other thing, when drinking to fit in, was that took me so long to figure out, because everybody's always like, well, why did you drink? Why did you drink? And I was kind of like, I don't know, because it was fun. Like when people would ask, I was like, I don't have a reason. There's no big trauma. There's no. And then finally I was like, it was to be quote unquote cool. It was to fit in. And then I heard you say it and I was like, yes.
Yes. And I felt you on avoiding the feelings for sure. And I also want to say congratulations on 5 years. And when you said, when you shared your story, that 8,000 folks reached out to you, I got tears in my eyes and cold chills. That's just so powerful. So thank you. And as we move forward and talk about the book and the inspiration, what are some themes and topics that you covered, such as societal perception, that you would like to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, so I really wanted to break the book down into what are the key topics that I see come up time and time again with thousands of women that I've supported that are the stumbling blocks to them creating a fabulous life alcohol-free. Because there's two different ways of approaching sobriety, right? There's the people that take a dry January month off and they sit at home and they cross off the days and they don't go out and they go, well, this is boring. It's like it's a punishment, right? And they're just doing time until the 1st of Feb when they can go and have a massive party, get as drunk as they like. So that's one way of doing it, which I did many, many, many times, right? The other way of doing it is, oh, well, instead of looking at what we're missing out on, let's start focusing on what we're gaining. Let's start looking at what the positives are. So in the book, I take the reader through a journey. And that journey is I share my story in a lot more detail. And then I talk about, well, what's the reason perhaps for you that you got to this point of drinking as a gray area drinker or wherever you are on that scale? And I think it's important that we look at how was alcohol role model to you? What did you, what had what is alcohol the solution for? Because alcohol's not the problem. We lose sight of that. Many of us are drinking regularly and consistently because it's a solution. And there are often three reasons. And I've got a community of 20,000 women, and I ran a poll and I said, why do you or did you drink? And these are all midlife women. And there were three reasons and three reasons only. And it was boredom, stress, and loneliness. And it was like, why have we got a generation of midlife women? And I've got women in my community from the UK, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. It doesn't matter where they are. They're Western countries. And it's the same themes coming up wherever you are in the world, boredom, stress, and loneliness. And alcohol is very good in the short term at making us not have to feel. But on top of that, we've got the commercial marketing of alcohol, where 30 years ago, the alcohol industry made a deliberate decision to start targeting women. They realized they hadn't been making enough money from women. And how can we segment our marketing to create drinks and marketing campaigns aimed purely at women? And that's where we saw the rise of pink drinks, how many pink gins and all the rosés and every sparkling drink suddenly came as a pink version. And that's when we saw all the product placements start to really increase. You know, any TV show you watch with a woman who's a police detective and she comes home after a hard day on, you know, of solving crimes, and she walks into her house and she goes straight to the fridge and she pours a glass of wine and she stands there and she goes, oh. And even though we don't realize it, the subliminal messaging we're giving in that moment is alcohol is my reward at the end of a busy day. Alcohol is the solution to stress. And so we've got this, the two things going on there, where we've got a society that's pushing that as the messaging that we get. And we've got women who are the most bored, stressed, and lonely than they've ever been because they spend so much of their time doing everything for everybody else. And so I've addressed that in detail in the book. And then I go in, you know, let's look at how we're going to manage physical cravings for alcohol. And I talk a lot about the neurotransmitters and the role of dopamine and serotonin, how sleep can impact things. And so there's a lot about the physical cravings of alcohol. And then I tackle those areas. I've got a chapter on stress and how to manage stress in a way healthier way than drinking a bottle of wine. I've got a chapter on socializing. So how do you navigate that with your friends? Because that can often be one of the biggest challenges that my clients face. I've got a section on your relationship. So what do you do if your partner still drinks? Because my husband and I met at 24 and we were both massive pitheads. And so like we partied together all the time. And so that was a massive change to our relationship as well when I stopped drinking. And then ultimately he finally stopped drinking as well. But alcohol had been our ritual of connection. He would come home from work. I would hear his truck pulling into the driveway. I'd be like, hello, it's wine time. He would come in, grab a beer from the beer fridge. I would open my wine. We'd go and sit outside in the garden and we'd have a debrief while we drank our drinks of, oh, how was your day? What happened today? And so when we stopped drinking, we stopped doing that. But that meant that our ritual of connection had gone. And then we became kind of further and further apart without us even realizing it. And I talk in the book about how we ended up in couples therapy and the tools that that therapist gave us to get back on track. I even go so far as talking about sober sex, because many of my clients in midlife, actually for the last 10, 20 odd years, have not been having sex with their partner without having a couple of drinks first to feel relaxed and to get into the mood. And so we talk about how to navigate that. And then I've got some really interesting and thought-provoking chapters about, well, what do I do for fun? How do I alleviate boredom in my life so that I don't need to drink alcohol? And then how do I think about my future, my purpose, my values, and creating that really intrinsic, fulfilling life as the woman I am today in midlife, thinking about the next 20, 30 years of my life, what do I want them to look like? Because one thing I know is that if we're drinking alcohol all the time, we lose sight of our future. We lose confidence. We lose self-belief. And then we stay stuck in Groundhog Day where every day is just the same. And we don't dare to dream big. We don't dare to have these big, exciting goals in life because alcohol robs our soul. It causes us to have anxiety. We start trusting ourselves because we're making all these promises and then breaking them. And so I'm really guiding the reader through that as well.
Oh, I loved that you addressed your husband and yours relationship, because me and my husband actually quit at the same time, which is really rare. And we were totally drinking buddies. I met him on a dating app. But one of the things I was looking for in a partner was a drink buddy. Like, I wanted somebody I could drink with because I really like to drink and party. And that was like a core value for me, which now I hear it and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so ridiculous. But I never have anything to offer anyone in that area because I'm like, I don't know, my husband just quit with me and it was magical and it was wonderful. And I highly suggest it to everybody. But you actually gave scripts of what to say, actually, and you give the scripts for like other people too. And I think that that is so helpful because I know for me, I wasn't worried about my husband, obviously, but I didn't know what I was going to tell everybody else. And I was so afraid that that was going to be one of the biggest issues. It turned out not to be one of the biggest issues, but I put off quitting drinking for the longest time because I was like, well, I don't even know what I'll tell anybody. And I will be so afraid to explain that to people. But I have to thank you for writing that chapter on you and your husband's relationship because I know it will help so many people.
Thank you.
And, you know, the way that you use your book as a reference guide with all of these teaching points from sober sex to fun is amazing. And a lot of us know what we need to do, but we don't know how. And it's so great that you give tangible steps on things that could work for the folks reading your book. And when you were talking about boredom, stress, and loneliness, so many people forget that so much fear are born out of those three things, particularly loneliness. And kind of what the oxymoron that booze does for loneliness.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about like when people would say, you're my new best friend, that was my joke always that I'd be like, oh, no, I made a best friend last night. And my husband would be like, oh, yeah. And he's like, do you remember the best friend? And he would be doing the slow fill. And I'd be like, oh, no, no, no. Or it would be the, you thought you were their best friend, but they were really irritated with you. And I was like, oh my gosh. So when you said that, I was like, yep, been there.
Yeah,
for sure. Perimenopause is near and dear to my heart right now. I feel like I'm consuming all things perimenopause as I'm suddenly realizing, oh shit, I'm in it. Like, so. I was like, having all these things happen. And I was like, no. And I was like, my hair is thinning, like in energy levels, anxiety levels. And I'm like, no, no, no. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, it's perimenopause. So when I found out that that's one area that you help women, I was like, yes, I would love for you to talk about that. And more importantly, how if you are drinking through perimenopause, the disservices it's doing, but also just I'll let you take it away because I know you're a professional in this area.
Absolutely. So I think it's just really important that we acknowledge, you know, it's interesting for me actually as a coach because I work with women all over the world. And in America, the American women that I work with seem to be the least informed about some of this information. Like it just seems like your governments and healthcare systems are not really going the extra way like they are in Australia and the UK now to really start talking about menopause and informing women of their rights and their choices. It just seems in the US and in Canada that that just is not a thing right now. Would that be right?
Oh, yeah. And it's very glossed over. Yeah. And when you were talking about the anxiety and just offered an anxiety pill right away, that was my story. I was drinking and I was drinking so much and she didn't ask me any of that. I mean, I lied on my form about how much I was drinking.
Of course, like we all did. Yeah.
Like I still didn't put myself in a good light, right? Yeah. And I was just like, and then the next year I was like, oh no, I don't need anything for anxiety. I actually quit drinking. And she acted like shocked, like what?
Yeah, right. Well, I know. It's just like, yeah, I've got clients who were told, oh, I'm worried about my drinking. And the doctors go, how much are you drinking? And they're like, oh, half a bottle to a bottle of wine most night. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's okay. Maybe just drop it back a bit. You know, like the perception is, unless you're drinking hard liquor every day in the morning and you don't have a problem with alcohol, but that's simply not the case. And it's interesting. And the other thing that I noticed with my US clients and Canadian clients is just how willingly your healthcare providers give out prescriptions for all sorts. But then don't actually catch up and go, okay, you've been on this for 6 months. Is it working? Mm-hmm. How should we think about getting you off it? I've got clients who've been on medications for 15 years and their GP has never once said to them, oh, should we review whether you still need that or not? It's interesting for me being observant of the different healthcare systems globally and the different approaches to using prescribed medication. So for any listeners out there, I would say we've got to advocate for ourselves, and we've got to take agency for ourselves and really question our healthcare providers. Do I still need this? How long do you think I'll need to take this for? When would we start working on a plan together for me to come off this or not? But just working out those options. So perimenopause, it's an area close to my heart. I'm in the thick of it now. And you know, most women don't realize that they start having perimenopausal symptoms up to 10 years before they go through menopause. And the average age of menopause is 51. So from like 41 onwards, we can start to get these fluctuations that cause a lot of symptoms, the night sweats, the insomnia, the anxiety, the lack of libido, the muscle and joint aching and pain, thinning hair, vaginal dryness, you know, all of these things that will start to happen that lots of women don't realize. And the reason that alcohol is a problem at this time is for several things. So we know that women cannot metabolize alcohol in the same way as a man. That's fact, no matter where the woman is in her menstrual cycles, whether she's still menstruating or not. Women produce less of an enzyme called ALDH, which is the enzyme that breaks down, metabolizes, and removes alcohol from the system. So a man has more of this enzyme, meaning a man, for drink, more alcohol would enter a woman's bloodstream than a man's if they were to drink exactly the same amount of alcohol. So this means that a woman is more prone to all of the health risks of alcohol. So the seven types of cancer that alcohol causes, the impact on heart health or the impact on immune health, the impact of liver disease. Next, as women become perimenopausal, they produce even less of this enzyme.
Yeah.
So once we get from our late 30s onwards, our liver volume starts shrinking. So we cannot metabolize alcohol in the same way in our 40s and 50s as we did in our 20s and 30s. So this is why many women notice when they get to this age that alcohol starts, they start to get more anxiety the next day. The hangovers might get worse. Alcohol's starting to really impact their sleep. The other thing that is a nightmare for women at this age is our progesterone levels start to significantly drop. And progesterone is the hormone responsible for us feeling calm and relaxed. So we are entering a time in our lives which for many women can coincide with us having teenage kids. And we all know what a shit show that is as a parent, right?
Right. I'm like, what a joke nature played on us with that one. I was just thinking about that today.
So our kids, you know, daughters might be starting menstruating. Boys are going through puberty. And I've got two kids going through all of this at the moment. So navigating this. We might have aging parents who are putting demands on us and we need to look after. We might still be working full time. There is still this perception that women need to be the one who are doing the lion's share of the jobs at home. And whether that's cooking, cleaning, organizing, the mental load of, right, that kid's got to be at that soccer game at that time. And then I've got a birthday party on Saturday, so I need to get that present. Oh my goodness, we've run out of toilet roll. Gosh, the cat needs to have her injection. And the mental load in a woman's head is intense at this time, and say more than ever. But she's also producing less progesterone, meaning that her body's natural defense to actually feeling calmer and less anxious is going. And then we drink, because in the short term, alcohol works. In the long term, it makes us more stressed and anxious. But we don't realize that, because all we want is the short term gain. So we'll pick up a drink and go, for half an hour, my brain just shuts off and I don't have to think about anything. But the problem is that the alcohol is causing us to release more of the stress hormone cortisol. So the next day we feel we have a shit sleep, we wake up feeling wretched, and we promise ourselves we're not going to drink. But then by 5 o'clock, we're like, oh, just one won't hurt. And we all know it's never just one. And so we just get trapped in that cycle. So what I see for all of my women in that perimenopause stage when they quit drinking is their sleep improves, their night sweats reduce, their anxiety massively reduces. Their skin really starts to glow and they get this healthy skin that they've never had before. But also what some realize is, oh, I'm in perimenopause, but I thought it was just hangovers. So then that gives them the chance to go to their healthcare provider and talk about, well, do I need HRT? What lifestyle choices do I need to be adding in for this stage in my life? But when everything is masked with alcohol, we've got no ability to do that.
Yeah. And that's something I even talk to our younger members about. Like, at least when you remove alcohol, you know that that's not the cause anymore. And you can really start saying, okay, maybe it's this and maybe it's that. But everything you're saying too with the, when you're talking about all the things that are going on in a woman's life at this point, I'm like, it is the busiest time. Like, I was just telling my husband about this stupid committee that I'm on. And I'm like, I have to get off of this. There are people who are retired that could be doing this. There are people in this that are younger than us. There is no reason I should have signed up for this when I am like my kid's chauffeur and doing a bajillion things. And he was like, okay. But to hear somebody else say it, I know you just validated so many of our listeners who are feeling the same way. And they're like, oh my gosh. And I know for me, it has given me the courage hearing other people like you talk about perimenopause. It gives me the courage to say, okay, I need to talk to my doctor about this. And I need to, if they don't know, then I need to say, lead me to someone who will know and who can help me, because I don't want to do it the way my mom did it.
Exactly. And it's really important that we do get separate opinions. So when I first went to my GP with my perimenopause symptoms, I have the Mirena. I don't know if you would have that over there, but it's a coiled IUD that has a tiny amount of progesterone that, and basically it stops you having periods, and it's contraception.
Yeah.
And so my GP said, oh no, because you have that, you don't need progesterone. Whereas I went to the Australian Menopause Center and they were like, oh no, no, the amount of progesterone is so small and it's so localized that it wouldn't be making any difference. You need to take a progesterone with your HRT. And so again, there's so much conflicting information. So take agency for yourself, get information. There's some incredible books out there about perimenopause. And the other thing that a lot of women don't know is, which I find super interesting, when we go on HRT, a lot of people's fear of HRT is breast cancer, because there was a study done, I think it was in the 1980s or the early 90s, where they had this link between breast cancer and taking HRT. Since then, that study has been reviewed and seemed to realize it was a storm in a teacup, that the findings were not accurate that they reported on. But no one actually came out and went, oh, that wasn't true. So there's a lot of fear around HRT and breast cancer. But what a lot of people are not talking about is the fact that if you drink alcohol and you're on HRT, your risk of breast cancer significantly increases. Now, I've done a poll and I've asked thousands of women who are on HRT, were you told when you were given your script for HRT that drinking alcohol on HRT increases your risk of breast cancer? So far, I think I've had 2 women out of thousands who were told that.
Wow.
I find that astonishing.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah, as a breast cancer survivor and a person who is in total menopause, I never had a provider tell me that alcohol is a carcinogenic substance to cause one of the 7 cancers. And as a person in total menopause, who cannot take hormone replacement therapy, for our listeners who may have a situation similar to mine, I'm sure that there are so many other ways to combat the symptoms that you said in many books. So to the listeners, you know, speak up, like you said, advocate, and change can't happen if you don't.
Exactly. And like you say, there are so many steps we can take ourselves outside of HRT that can significantly make us feel better. So looking at our nutrition, looking at managing our stress, looking at whether we are exercising, looking at whether we're getting enough vitamin D, looking at whether we've got the facts in life, you know, those core pillars of what make women feel good. Do we have authentic connection in our life? Do we have a sense of purpose? So I find that if we can really work on these foundational pillars, the improvement in our physical and mental health is significant.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you so much. And I want to, in closing, ask you a question. What was a surprising benefit of being alcohol-free that you didn't expect?
It's a hard one.
Yeah, there are probably a few, but I would say that I didn't expect my self-belief and self-confidence to increase in the way that it did. because you don't realize how much it's lacking until you actually start to get it. And when you actually start to grow in confidence and grow in self-belief, and you take these chances and you start dreaming bigger and you start going, oh yeah, of course I can do that. And you look back and you go, wow, my life was so small when I was drinking. My life, and there was me feeling afraid of removing alcohol, thinking I was going to have a less than life without alcohol. And yet by removing alcohol, I've gone to create a fulfilling, big, adventurous, exciting, interesting life that has all of its ups and downs as life does. Sobriety is not a superpower to make all the shit things of life go away. That is not how it works. But sobriety gives you the tools to navigate everything in life that it throws at you in a way healthier way. And to grow in that confidence and that self-belief has been life-changing.
Absolutely. So Sarah, tell the listeners where they can find you, like your website. You mentioned that your book is for sale wherever folks buy books. Please share your website and any social media handles that you would like to.
Yeah, so my website's sarahrusbach.com. So just my name, and my last name is R-U-S-B-A-T-C-H. And by the time our episode goes live, I should have a page up and running with my courses page. And I've actually got a menopause course on there with just a one-stop pack that gets really insightful information on menopause, where I've interviewed some global guest experts on how women can navigate this stage in their life and what to eat to prevent that midlife weight gain that can often happen because we become more insulin resistant when our hormones start fluctuating. And that means that lots of women start putting weight on around the belly. And that can be, you know, really, really disappointing. And it feels like everything you do, but nothing worked. And so I've got a course going onto my website focusing on that. I've got a course, a 30-day alcohol-free program on there. I've got a nutrition course on there. So there's lots of self-paced courses because I have so many clients and listeners in the US. And I wanted to have something where they can access all this information, but it not have to be live because of the time difference between us. So that will be on there. I'm very present on Instagram, which is just my name, at Sarah Rusbach. My book is available all over America. It's on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. And that's called Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free.
Yes. And I highly recommend it. I have loved reading it. And so have all of our members. They've just, like, everybody's been like, this is what we all needed. We needed this little boost. So thank you so much for writing it, because I know that it's going to empower a lot of people and just help so, so many people. So
thank you.
Be sure to go check out all the links in the show notes, because I will put all of that in there. And you can go find Sarah on Instagram. And I have to say, if you like my walking and talking reels that I do, Sarah does very similar ones where I've been watching you and I'm like, oh, she's walking and talking. I love it. So, and yes, very conversational in your posts and very real. So definitely worth a follow. But
yes. And thank you for being the very first guest on the No More Wasted Days podcast.
Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you for having me.
We didn't want you to be afraid.
Surprise. So thank you. And thanks for listening to another episode of the No More Wasted Days podcast. Make sure you hit the subscribe, rate, review the podcast, share this episode with your friends or family if you think that they need to hear this genius episode that Sarah has so graciously taken her time and been on the show. And bye, y'all.